Well, I've been looking forward to this one, talking to director Ryan White about his latest project, Ask Dr. Ruth. She seems like a fascinating woman on paper, loved her on TV. Ryan, you're here in the studio with us to tell us how you captured Ruth Westheimer on film. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Doing great, thanks. So you're too young to have watched Dr. Ruth, or are you?
No, I'm not too young. I mean, I think I'm 37, so I was a child in the 80s and a teenager in the 90s, and that was when, you know, she was pretty ubiquitous. So I don't think I fully understood all the time what Dr. Ruth was talking about, but I definitely grew up with that voice in my household, always on television.
So talk to us a little bit about how the film came to be.
A producer, Rafi Marmor, called me and said, would you like to have dinner with Dr. Ruth? And to me, I hadn't thought of Dr. Ruth in decades. I didn't know what she was still doing. And of course, I jumped at the opportunity and I flew out to New York and met her for lunch, or for dinner rather, and fell in love right away. And I, as I said, grew up with Dr. Ruth, always remembering her talking about sex on the radio and television. But I didn't know her backstory, which is a substantial part of the film, which she's a Holocaust survivor. She didn't become famous until she was almost 55 years old. So there's a whole lifetime before the public persona of Dr. Ruth that I think people don't know about. That was a real delight and treasure to get to tell.
Yeah. How fun was it to follow her around?
It is the most fun I've ever had making a film. I can say that unequivocally. She's 90. She turned 90 while we were making the film. And I can't keep up with her. We traveled the world together. I mean, we went back to Switzerland, where she was raised in an orphanage after her family was killed in the Holocaust. We went to Israel, where she was a sniper for the Haganah when she was a 17-year-old, an 18-year-old. So I traveled the world with her, and she still goes a mile a minute from morning till night, and I'm the one who is always hitting the pillow first.
Yeah. Is she here with you?
She's here. So she will be, we premiere today at 12:30, and she will be there at the Q&A. My friends were sending me pictures yesterday from the Salt Lake Airport when she arrived at baggage claim and was being mobbed by everybody and taking selfies. So I think she's going to enjoy it. She's seen the film and she really likes the look back on her last 90 years. And I think she's going to really enjoy getting to discuss that with audiences.
I wanted to ask you about that because I saw an interview with her and she said that until she actually watched the movie, she really hadn't been that introspective about her life. And what was it like watching her watch it?
It was actually quite painful. I mean, we watched it on a laptop. It was a very simple viewing. I just went to her apartment. By the way, she's lived in the same apartment in Washington Heights, New York, since the 1950s. And so even after she became Dr. Ruth, she didn't feel like she needed to upgrade to a fancier lifestyle. And I showed it to her on a laptop. And, you know, Dr. Ruth is very good at humor, but she doesn't really enjoy delving into her painful past. And the movie really does that. And it does it in many ways, including animating a lot of her childhood, which she had never seen. But she was a part of making that decision that I was going to do that because she had kept all of her diaries from when she was a child. And she actually kept all of the letters from her parents that they were writing her after she was sent off on the kinder transport to an orphanage before they died. And so we used those letters from her parents and her own diaries, her own voice, to animate her childhood. So I think it was pretty painful for her to watch. She always jokes that German Jews don't cry, or they don't cry in public, at least. And she'll say, you know, but maybe after you left, I shed a few tears.
Mm. So all the diaries, I guess, in German then, yeah?
It's in German and Hebrew, because she speaks so many languages. She ping-ponged all over the world. So she originally spoke German, and then she ended up in Palestine. It was before it was even Israel. And then started speaking Hebrew, and then came to the U.S. in the 1950s, not speaking a word of English, and she was a single mother in the U.S.
Yeah, and what brought her to the States?
She always wanted to come to the U.S., and they sent reparation checks to survivors of the Holocaust at some point. I mean, she was very, very poor. Even when she was living in the U.S. in the 50s and 60s, she was very poor, working as a housemaid. But she got a check that was enough to get her a one-way boat over to the U.S., so that's how she immigrated over here.
What was that journey like from being poor in the 50s and 60s to where she is today? I mean, what made that leap?
Well, it's probably the climax of our film is the year.
Well, don't give it away if you don't want to.
I won't. But it's the year 1981 when she really, you know, like I said, she had been a single mother. She had put herself through school. She had finally created her own family, and she had gotten her doctorate in education and was studying sex therapy at Cornell Medical Center. And I won't give away the climax, but kind of on a whim, she took a job that. A radio job, actually, to do a radio program just for 15 minutes. And that radio program within a year became a sensation all over New York City.
So is this part of the whole Masters and Johnson's era? Is that right? Masters and Johnson's?
Yeah, yeah.
The whole era there?
Yeah, I mean, she often credits Kinsey, of course, and Masters and Johnson, and actually a woman named Helen Singer Kaplan, who was Dr. Ruth's mentor. That was the woman running the sex therapy program at Cornell Medical Center. So I often hear, you know, Dr. Ruth still teaches two university classes at 90 years old, so she's always lecturing students. And I often hear in her classes her referencing those three as the real forerunners in human sexuality.
And I think that's what we all love about her so much is the fact that that sex is just no nonsense. None of us would be here without the sex act. So how did she become so casual or just matter of fact about it?
Well, I think she often credits, we have a scene in our film, and it's a 60 Minutes piece that Diane Sawyer did on Dr. Ruth. I think it's in the late 80s. And she always equates it to the fact that she was already old or seemingly old, that it kind of disarmed people that this grandmother, she was known as Grandma Freud. She's 4'7". So that also disarms people. There's kind of that adorable factor to her that you can't help but love her, but you also can't believe what's coming out of her mouth. But I think you're right. I think in so many ways, Dr. Ruth brought sex to the forefront in a way that wasn't sensational. In fact, Dr. Ruth's television career kind of ended as sensational television started beginning. She refused to do those types of talk shows that exploited people. And she carried on with her career, writing books, teaching classes, but she didn't want to be a part of that type of television anymore. But I think it's a real, it's a sign of the times. Like, I don't think there could be anyone like Dr. Ruth now. I think that she was kind of the perfect storm of somebody that we needed in the 80s and early 90s to normalize so many sexual practices for Americans.
Yeah, so when you went through all of the archival stuff to choose from, what was your, I don't know, what was your barometer of I gotta include this?
It's very hard because, you know, we're making a 90-minute film and I had a whole team of incredible people. I didn't get to watch, you know, I probably watched a fraction of it because there's so much. She had so many television shows, so many radio shows, and thank God Dr. Ruth is a pack rat because she kept copies of everything. Normally, when you're making a film about the 80s, the archival is almost impossible to find, but she had kept everything. So it was such an amazing atmosphere in the office to hear people getting to listen to her all day long or just to hear her voice. And it was difficult to decide because you have the, I don't want to say trivial, but you have the day-to-day, you know, sexual problems, premature ejaculation, having difficulty reaching an orgasm, the things she's heard over and over again. So we wanted to balance those types of problems that American callers were calling in with the much more serious issues that Dr. Ruth, you know, because really she was on the forefront of so many parts of the sexual revolution, including abortion. Dr. Ruth was working for Planned Parenthood before abortion was even legal, and definitely including gay rights and homosexuality, especially when the AIDS epidemic hit. She was one of the ones really at the forefront, challenging the discrimination that was happening against gay people and the blame, and saying, you know, we need to look at this from a scientific vantage point and find a cure. So yeah. It was really trying to balance those fun moments and the more serious ones.
Well, so as you kind of followed her around, what was the best sex advice you walked away with?
I think it's probably the biggest misconception about Dr. Ruth is that, you know, I see it all the time. People walk up to her in airports or on the streets and ask her a sex question. And of course, she's happy to answer. But in her personal life, I have I think I can say not once ever heard her talk about sex, including in her daily interactions with people. You know, so her family, who are all here, who are lovely, you know, she had to recreate her family because she lost everyone. So she has two kids and four grandkids. They never hear her talk about sex. Not once did she ask me a question about my sex life. My relationship life, she did, because she's a very interested person in personal connections and human interaction. Because I think people often forget she was also a relationship therapist, not just a sex therapist. So much of her advice was about intimacy or building relationships. So she would ask me about that, but not once did I ever hear her talk about sex, or did she ask me about my sex life.
Well, in that same interview with her, she said that her goal was to live large, make a dent in the world, and never retire. And I think she's accomplishing all those things.
She will never retire. She says, don't retire, rewire is always her line. Yeah, and I think, you know, she lost so much in her life and she had to rebuild so much that line in the film that she feels the obligation for her parents and the rest of her family who were murdered in the Holocaust to leave a lasting impact on the world. I don't think anyone would argue that she has accomplished that and probably will continue to accomplish that.
Okay. This is part of the documentary premiere. Had you been to Sundance before?
I have been to Sundance before. I came here with a film called The Case Against Eight with HBO in 2014.
Excellent.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay. Your premiere will be Sunday morning, 8:30 a.m., Prospector Square. You'll be over at the Sundance Mountain Resort.
Premiere is today, actually.
Oh, today? Oh, I didn't
and
have it on my schedule.
And that's our second screening.
Okay. What's today, then?
Today's at 12:30 at the Ray, and then Sunday is the second screening.
Okay.
The Prospect.
Okay. You're at the Sundance Resort on Monday evening, and back in Park City on Saturday, the 2nd at 6 o'clock at the Park Avenue Theater. Well, best of luck. So you've got it's acquired? I mean, you have...
Yeah, we made it with Hulu, who are an incredible partner and you know, came on in the very early stages, which is always wonderful for a documentary filmmaker. So it'll be coming out on Hulu later this year. And Magnolia is also going to be working to bring it to movie theaters. So, you know, Dr. Ruth's audience can skew older. And so I think it's a good audience for movie theaters. So we're hoping, you know, that audiences turn out movie theaters, and then also everyone can watch it on Hulu soon thereafter.
Okay, well, congratulations.
Thank you
so
much.
Hey, thanks for joining us. Ryan White, again, the director of Ask Dr. Ruth. You're listening to the Sundance Reel here on KPCW.